I've been reading from Stonehenge. A closer look. Now, I'm just out here setting people free, you know. Free from traditions and bondage to those traditions that make void the Word of God. And the subject focus right now is God's control over history. And to give you a little more appreciation for God's Word that gets knocked around by the naturalists and the modern scientific community, while they offer a substitute which is full of holes. The Bible is taught that this earth has been struck on more than one occasion by great cataclysms that change things considerably. The Bible has taught down through the generations that man started out in contact with a source of life and knowledge, God, that he then was separated from and began to deteriorate. But that even during the initial phase of the separation, man was in contact with beings of superior knowledge, supernatural nature, and that this didn't change in the general frame until the cataclysm of the flood, and didn't change specifically even then. I mean, Abram certainly was visited with outer space creatures. Those whatevers that met him and talked to him about Sodom and Gomorrah didn't grow up in the neighboring village. And it wasn't a bearded old man that Moses talked to on Mount Sinai. Some hermit of the desert. And Elijah didn't just put on a super tumbling act. And it wasn't a strong wind that blew open the gates of the prison and let Peter out. And Paul expected to be taken literal when he said he was caught up into the third heaven and shown things it wasn't lawful to describe. And if somebody returned on a cruise ship from the Isle of Patmos today and tried to convince you they had the experience that John the Revelator had on that island, we'd commit them. Now, I often say if you're going to be a Christian, be one. And if you believe in the resurrection of Christ, you're out in left field as far as the natural world is concerned. So have the guts, which is 90% of faith, to stick to your faith and be secure in it. I preached a message today, and a lot of people have called and said they appreciated the message. Others of you should call and tell me if you appreciated the live service today and the repeat this afternoon here in the Los Angeles and in the San Francisco area. But what kind of God is it that we are claiming when we say my strength and my defense? Now, from there to the pyramid and the Stonehenge monument is a large leap. But I want it understood, I'm not just studying these things because they attract curiosity, though that is true. It's just one more marking on the stage of history, demonstrating the veracity of the biblical view of God and his control over history. Isaiah 19, as we've referred to it many times, can only reference the pyramid in Egypt. So there's going to be the biggest house-moving job or grave-digging job ever done in the history of mankind, because the pyramid sits exactly at the only spot that Isaiah 19 says there will be a monument in the last days, a witness for God. The pyramid is that monument. Some Christian television network was building a transmitter somewhere in Egypt, and they were claiming they were going to be that witness in the last days. From what I read in the book of Revelation of what's going to happen to this earth during the tribulation, there ain't no Christian broadcasting station that can build a transmitter strong enough to stay on the ground. And Stonehenge, linked to the pyramid, also raises another question, which is important to consider for biblical students, and that's the continuing and unique connection between Egypt, Israel, and Britain. Now, the people I've been teaching for 12 years are so smart they make me sick. All this review is old hat to them. But they better not look bored. Now, this book by Bonnie Gaunt, which we've gone into as a side road in our study of the pyramid, has a basic thesis. The premise of that thesis I agree with. We'll find another book here. The guys that bring my books in didn't leave me without the Reader's Digest summary of World's Last Mysteries, but it looks like they did. I'll have to survive without the Reader's Digest picture book. This little book by Bonnie Gaunt has a basic premise of interpretation about Stonehenge. Her premise is that the lineup of the various stones enables a dating of significant dates in a 7,000-year period. And like the pyramid, it marks certain historic events in the 360-degree circle, which said historic events hit with such consistent accuracy that it suggests that certain other dates pinpointed in a 7,000-year chronometer will be equally accurate. She may be right. And if she is, in the basic premise, then she's in the role of the person who first had the insight to suggest that the inner passages of the pyramid represented a chronometer of date lines, including prophetic date lines. Indeed, as the pyramid, when built, would represent mostly prophetic date lines, whereas now the probability of its dates being accurate are increased by the historic proof that what at one time was prophecy and now has become history has accurately hit on the button time after time, gives the faith to believe that the prophetic dates will be equally significant, whether capable of being figured out in their precise meaning or not. When Stonehenge was built, most of the dates in the date line chronometer that's laid out in this book with Bonnie Gaunt would have been prophecy. They now are pretty much history. And this is a very interesting chronometer that she has laid out in this book. For example, the birth of Christ, 2 BC, is pinpointed. The death of Christ, 33 AD, is pinpointed. First Punic War. Israel's last possible jubilee. Israel divided. Saul made king of Israel. Gideon defeats the Midianites. Division of Canaan. She even has the completion of the Great Pyramid, and it's things like that that begin to cause me to question, because that date is uncertain. Birth of Shem. Death of Adam. Birth of Noah. Now, I don't know whether she is all wet or not on these specific dates. Neither do I know whether she's all wet on the 7,000 year chronometer. That historically has been the viewpoint of biblical scholars for many, many years. A day with the Lord is as 1,000 years. And it is therefore assumed that God's going to rest on the seventh day. Therefore, 6,000 years from Adam must go by. And at the end of those 6,000 years, the millennium, which starts the Sabbath day, the seventh day of 1,000 years, will enter in. One of the TV preachers, old-time friend of mine, we've crossed paths for many years, and I've always been amused at his courageous sticking out of the neck quality. But he is putting a special on TV around the country. I predict 2000 AD, again premised on that important event, that 2000 AD, as the traditional Bible scholars would view it, begins that seventh day. 1,000 years is a day in God's chronometer of 7,000 years. One doesn't know whether or not this lady is so affected by that premise of 7,000 years that she immediately leaps upon the 360-degree circle, if it has a chronometer in it, requiring that it be broken into the 7,000-year unit frame. What I am convinced of is that she has hit upon a principle in Stonehenge, that as the pyramid began to get refinement, as scholars took the principle and began to study the passages, this lady, seeing some rather significant datelines in the chronometer of Stonehenge, has, as many have done with the pyramid and many have done with the Bible, taken the principle, applied it in a constricted, preconceived number of years approach, and rigidly nailed down dates prematurely. I think that she has hit on a principle, and there might be a chronometer in Stonehenge, but it needs a great deal more research before you draw the firm conclusions and pick the dates that she has so fixedly picked. She may be proven right. It's worthy of study. But as I read from this book, it doesn't mean that I am buying her chronometer and I'm bothered because she's just dead wrong on a couple of dates. The lines that are in Stonehenge would hit the date. But the event she ties to the date is not the proper event to fix to the date, which gives the suggestion of what accountants do sometime. When they're 7 cents off balancing their books, they just add 7 cents somewhere. And when you're talking 7,000 years and you're 2 years off, well, just change the date by 2 years. The pyramid has survived the scholarship and the test of time, and some of the earlier students of the pyramid tended to juggle the dates to fit the inches. Continued scholarship has said if there is a date line in the pyramid, an inch is an inch. And if a date that traditional history suggests for an event is 3 years off, question the traditional date. Don't bend the inches. And over the years, as with the Exodus out of Egypt and the birth of Christ, further historical searchings and archaeology have confirmed the fixed date in the pyramid. That kind of hard-nosed approach, if there is a chronometer in Stonehenge, needs to be applied. And this book stands in the position of the first writer in the 1800s who recognized a consistency between dates and places in the inner passages of the pyramid that caused honest, solid, continuing research to give the pyramid greater stature as time went on than the earliest projections by overeager recognizers of the chronometer, but overeager stretchers of dates to make the chronometer work with limited information they had at the time. So I'm not buying or recommending, I'm agnostic about her chronometer. What is important about this book, as with many of the books in the pyramid studies that I do, are the diagrams that are so useful and the recognition of a relationship between the pyramid and Stonehenge that cannot be ignored. I am not saying that Bonnie Gaunt, in her study of Stonehenge, is wrong in her 7,000-year chronometer. I am saying some of the dates, not many, but some of the dates, bother me, such as giving 2140 as the date for the construction of the pyramid, which is just dead wrong. I think 2140 may be significant because she finds that date on her chronometer, but assigning the building of the pyramid to it is stretching it. But when they first began to study the passages of the pyramid, Davidson was one of the great researchers. He was further down the line from Taylor. And the early voices who first recognized the prophetic roadmap in the interior passages of the pyramid. But even by Davidson's day, to make certain dates preconceived from tradition fit the pyramid, they were measuring in the middle of the passage instead of the floor line, and various other adjustments of that nature. Continued, I repeat, honest research fixed the date line along the floor line, where the measurements can be confirmed from so many different independent sources, and an inch to a year is an inch to a year on the floor line, and no Mickey Mousing to make a date somehow match an inch. Now, I've already told you, many who study the pyramid start getting fuzzy when they get to the great step. They don't tell us why. That an inch going vertical up the great step should not be a year. And why the step is to assume a change in the dating method of an inch to a year. That's the addition of a subjective factor to an objective stone monument. We don't have to guess what the bench line date is. Modern science can fix the date, and as I've said, the plain of Alcyone and the Pleiades and the Dragon Star do not hit in the fall, nor do they hit in 40 BC, 2140, nor do they hit in 2142. They hit at the vernal equinox, the spring and not the fall. And floor line to floor line. Now, I believe that this lady has hit on something very important about Stonehenge in addition to its lineup to stars and moon and sun, and the summer and winter solstice. As the pyramid gets your attention by its demonstration of superior scientific knowledge, once that demonstration of superior scientific knowledge grabs the attention, the real message of the pyramid is in its historic and prophetic date lines. Now, Stonehenge gets your attention when you realize that it is so perfectly aligned with the pyramid that the same architect had to be involved. In spite of all the theories about when it was built, and the theories that it went through four different phases of building, which is the standard traditional viewpoint, including the one that this lady buys, much to my amazement. And the books by Capt, who you're familiar with because of his pyramid book that we gave away. Every one of these scholars, by the traditional theory that the Stonehenge monument was built through successive phases and different generations of people build it to its finished product. Well, let me say that the same theories from which the phases of building it are deduced could just as validly have it built right once and have phases of rebuilding. There is nothing to force the decision that Stonehenge was built in successive phases. And I'm unimpressed with carbon dating. Carbon dating, just like carbon-14 dating, which assumes on organic matter a formula of loss of some of that matter over so many years, a half-life loss, half of its substance going at a certain time, assumes an atmosphere like we now have. Now, if there was a canopy prior to the flood, and there certainly was a different atmosphere, because, or else the Bible's not true, because the Bible clearly says there was no rain. Thus, the atmosphere couldn't have been as it now is. And science assumes things have always gone on the same way, including condensation, clouds, rain, evaporation. There was no rain prior to the flood. And I embrace the theory, as many do, that there was a canopy that covered the earth, giving it the equivalent of a hothouse-type atmosphere, far different than we now know. If that atmosphere was different, then you can just blow the theories of carbon half-life dating. Prior to the flood, carbon half-life doesn't mean a damn thing. And it isn't worth very much until you get over 5,000 years anyway. So what good is it in proving theories if it only takes us back to the flood in the first leap? Indeed, takes us beyond the flood in the first leap. And if it takes us beyond the flood in the first leap, then it's unreliable anyway, because it embraces in the first leap, if it does, a period when the release of that substance was at a changed rate.
This is the end of side one.